Hello. If you're listening to this, you're listening to a free preview of this paid episode of the Studies Show podcast. If you want to hear the full episode, you have to go to www.thestudiesshowpod.com and become a paid subscriber. There are various different options on the site. And if you do that, you won't just get access to the full episode here. You'll get access to several other paid episodes that we've done in the past, all of which tend to be on fairly controversial topics. So that's www.thestudiesshowpod.com. Enjoy the free preview.
Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Tom.
You've been reading anything interesting recently, Stuart?
Yes, I have actually. Yeah, I've been reading The Anarchist Cookbook. I've been been reading some of that. I've looked through a couple of chapters of Mao's Little Red Book.
Fine. Okay.
And I've actually been leafing through every night before bed. I've been leafing through Mein Kampf. So yeah, some pretty good literature there. You been reading anything interesting?
For work, I've been reading the Cass review, actually.
Oh, sorry, man. That sounds a bit too controversial for me.
Jesus Christ.
So, that was our contrived intro to the fact that we're going to be talking about a very controversial new piece of scientific literature today.
Yes.
It's the Cass review on youth gender medicine. Mm-hmm. And
we're
there won't
a bit
be any more jokes
about it. No, there'll be jokes for the rest of it.
That's the only joke we're going to put in the podcast because it is a serious topic. But we just wanted to highlight the fact that this is a very controversial.
We also just quickly ought to highlight the fact that Stuart hasn't been reading Mein Kampf. That was a joke wanted to make.
Or
to
the
be
other
clear.
Two. Not been reading any of those books. That was purely for
a comic effect.
Yeah, exactly. So welcome to this paid edition of The Studies Show. This is about youth gender medicine and the Cass review. And this is a review. We'll talk about the background to it. But what's been reported in the media recently is that the review came to the conclusion that youth gender medicine is an area of, and to quote the review, remarkably weak evidence. Where studies are exaggerated or misrepresented by people on all sides of the debate to support their viewpoint. The reality is we have no good evidence. Remarkably weak evidence, no good evidence, studies being exaggerated and misrepresented. It sounds like a case for The Studies Show.
Absolutely, it does, yes.
Even if it is a rather controversial topic. So, Tom, why don't you take us through some of the background to the Cass review?
All right, okay. So the background is that the UK's only youth gender medicine clinic, which was the Gender and Identity Development Service, GIDS, at the Tavistock Hospital the Tavistock Square in London.
I've seen people say JIDS, by the way.
Have you?
I've heard people say JIDS.
Would you say JIDS, or would you say GIF or JIF?
Well, but it's gender, isn't it? So maybe that's why. It's GIF, by the way.
Yeah, it's obviously
GIF. I think it might be JIDS. Anyway, carry on.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Anyway, that launched in 1989 in Tavistock Square in central London. Yeah. And it treated and diagnosed young people with gender dysphoria. Now, gender dysphoria, this is going to get really difficult to talk about because you're talking about people who, when they are early in their life, they're referred to by one pronoun and then that shifts often to be referred by a different one. I'm really going to try and not be offensive or anything like that, but I'll follow the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the sort of the textbook
psychiatric textbook, Bible, basically.
On language. Its definition of gender dysphoria is a marked incongruence between one's experienced or expressed gender and assigned gender of at least 6 months duration. And it involves a strong desire to be or insistence that one is of the other gender. In boys, that's a strong preference for stereotypically female clothes and toys and vice versa, and a strong dislike for one's sexual anatomy and desire for the sexual characteristics of the other gender. Okay. Certain amount of paraphrasing in there, but that's the gist.
And so the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual only counts something as a disorder if it's causing you problems in your daily life, right? So there's a difference between incongruity, so just the mere feeling that you are a different sex from your sort of biological, or a different gender for your biological sex. And then there's dysphoria, which is when you actually have distress due to that, and it causes you problems
in your daily life. Yeah. So the Cass, citing the DSM, says gender incongruence. That's just feeling like you're the other gender than the one you were sort of registered as at birth, has to be associated with clinically significant distress or impairment of function. So you could have gender incongruence but be quite entirely happy about it and not experience dysphoria. And I think that's quite common, Cass says, in younger children, but then dysphoria, the sort of discomfort with being the opposite sex, often arises during puberty.
Okay.
And there are various treatments for gender dysphoria, and obviously that includes therapy and counselling. But for some young patients, doctors prescribe puberty blocking drugs, which have been used for a very long time in children who have precocious puberty, sort of early onset puberty. But in this case, it's used to delay the onset of normal puberty, which obviously brings on secondary sexual characteristics, you know. So to put it bluntly, boys start looking more like men.
Yes.
And because, you know, at puberty, and it becomes harder to sort of notice, to ignore the difference between sexes.
Their voices get deeper, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And women develop breasts and so on.
Yeah.
And after that, some children go on to cross-sex hormones, so masculinizing hormones such as testosterone for females, you know, trans boys, and feminizing hormones for males, you know, natal males, trans males.
So there's two separate, and this is what the review is focused on to a large extent, is the evidence for these two separate treatments. So it's puberty blockers to delay the onset of puberty, and cross-sex hormones, and they come after. And then there's also this other set of treatments that don't involve what they call the medical pathway, which are therapy, counseling, and so on. So only some fraction, and we'll talk about how big that fraction is, of patients who have gender dysphoria eventually then go on to the medical pathway, and that means puberty blockers and then hormones, and others, I assume, don't get any treatment at all, or get therapy and counselling, and so on. And actually, a big part of the debate around this is that a lot of people who have experienced this, and families who have experienced this, say that there isn't good enough care. You know, that people are on huge, long waiting lists,
is definitely part of it. All right. So the question, of course, is how many children do go on to these things, and for what intended outcome, and with what actual outcomes? And I think those are all questions we're going to try to answer with the help of the Cass review and other studies over the course of the next however long this takes us. All right, so but let's return to the story, the growth of the Tavistock and GIDS or GIDS. There's a Vice 2016 article from 2016 which says, point, you know, it's meeting people from the Tavistock, which says in 1989 when it started, Tavistock had 2 referrals all year. Other data, you know, showed the Vice, they show that it went up to 97 in 2009-2010, so what's that, 20 years later? By 2015-2016 it was 1,400. Now this is after the Vice article was written, but the later data shows that it was 2,519 by 2017-2018. So that's a huge increase. Obviously that's more than 1,000-fold over nearly 30 years, 29 years. That's been at the heart of why this is, that's been the focus of a lot of attention. It's not in and of itself a bad thing, right? It's not necessarily, you know, there's a lot, if lots of people, more people are getting treatment for a condition that they needed treatment for, that's a good thing.
Right.
So there's obviously lots of speculation about why these numbers have gone up. We're not going to talk about them enormously here because it's such an extra, a wider topic, but it's definitely noteworthy. And
it's a similar debate in lots of other,
mental health areas,
mental health related issues, or developmental disorders like autism as well. Like, they're diagnosed at a much higher rate now than they were a few decades ago. What's the explanation for that? And this is one of that. Although I think the rate of growth is certainly, if you just look at the admissions to somewhere like GIDS for gender dysphoria, is much faster than for other disorders, is my understanding.
Yeah, so there's lots of reasons why that could be happening, but it's definitely noteworthy. And it's also, I mean, what's important is that it's whatever the reason, it's hard for a little organization to scale that quickly. Okay, that becomes relevant. Okay, that's the end of the free preview of this episode of the Studies Show. As Stuart said earlier, if you enjoyed it, please do go and subscribe at thestudiesshowpod.com and become a paid member, which will get you access to this episode and the various other spicier topics that we've addressed in the past. Thanks very much for listening.